You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
It's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, if he was a member of the Bad Batch, his code name would be Boiler. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm nice and warm. I have a nice new boiler, not leaking anymore. I'm very happy. How are you, dude?
I'm good. Yeah, week's gone by fast and there's loads of Star Wars news dropping. Trailers coming out, posters coming out, games coming out from different franchises to do with Lucasfilm. So yes, it's been a busy week, but it's all good.
That's good to hear. The news machine seems to be in full swing at Lucasfilm and Disney. So that's good for us because that means that we're going to have a very eventful, hopefully, 24 and maybe 25 as well.
Let's hope.
So big question for you, sir. What is new in your collection room?
So this is me being dippy. So I ordered a Dawn of the Jedi, the hardback, the Essential Legends Collection hardback version of Dawn of the Jedi. Got it ordered. Absolutely gorgeous. Pick up the box and then notice that next to it is another box looking very similar. So I pick up that box and I open them both. And long story short, and I don't know how I did it, but I ordered two copies. So I now have two copies of the ELC. Yeah, well, you're more than welcome to it, mate, because it needs to find a new home. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know how I did it, but it's absolutely gorgeous. Blue edges to the paper, yeah. Sort of gold leaf almost on the cover because it's a beautifully ornate cover. So very pleased with that. So that was one thing that came in. Then I got around the house, mainly in the collection room, but I've always had a couple of calendars on the go. But now I've got a little desk calendar, the Return of the Jedi desk calendar, which is really sweet. It's good size. And then the third thing was, and this was a bit special, I was mooching around eBay. Just, you know, sometimes you just go on eBay and just type in Star Wars and see what's going now in the next five minutes.
Yeah.
Didn't see anything that really floated my boat, but just following threads, ended up getting, it's a Lucasfilm employee invite to the Millennium Supper, which took place December the 7th, 2013, at the Regency Center in San Francisco. It's a square card. Basically, it's beautifully done. I guess you'd call it Art Deco. The image is, it's like the front grille of a car, like a 1930s car, but where the Rolls-Royce sort of emblem would be on the very edge of the hood is the Falcon. And it just says Millennium Supper Club. So that came through. I was really chuffed with that. So something a bit different. So I haven't got it up in the room yet. It's on the stairs waiting to go up. But just got to find a suitable home for that. Pleased with that. So a few other little bits and bobs, nothing crazy, but they're the main things. What about you?
Well, the big thing is space. So over Christmas, I ran out of space and I didn't on purposely ask for much in the way of Star Wars. I'm at maximum capacity. Yeah. Well, the little stuff that I did have, I went to put away. And basically, one thing led to another. And I got so sick and tired of moving all these boxes around and stuff like that. I was like, okay, sod it. I'm going to do it. So I listed my Razor Crest. That sold. Long story short, I'm getting rid of all my vintage collection figures.
Okay.
I've cherry-picked the ones that I want to keep. But for the most part, I was like, I haven't kept up with the waves and I'm not likely to kind of want to go back and try and chase those for the price that they are. The fact is these figures are bubble to bubble on a shelf, not doing anything and in plastic boxes and stuff. So it's like, you know what? Time to thin out the collection because I can't see any of the stuff that I've got in the actual bookcases, which is all the stuff that I said to Karen when I moved in. This is the stuff I want to display. And all I've done is basically just fill up stuff in front of it. But that's been the big thing. And then like I picked up the other day, I was actually looking for a 007 crew beanie from Spectre. And the guy who was selling it was also selling two solo production crew beanies. So the stunt crew, which has got like it's like a ragdoll stormtrooper. And I think it's just how the stormtrooper's fallen on the kind of embroidery. And also then a standard red cup beanie. So got those. Yeah. But speaking of random stuff, so this is very random. Just let's stick with it. So I was on perusing Facebook Marketplace because I basically like to put my life into my own hands by kind of like going around to people's houses randomly and just picking stuff up. We got chatting in the Marketplace chat and he doesn't live too far away. And he kind of said, well, I'm getting rid of a load of Bond stuff. So if you want it, you can just have like some of his stuff for free. And I go, that's great. Kind of books and stuff, which I didn't have or have passed on. So that's nice. But he also talked about, like, you know, I run this podcast, and he's done a 007 podcast. I think it was like the A to Z of James Bond. He was, oh, I've got a couple of bits of like Star Wars stuff that I'll just chuck in. You can just have it. It's fine. These were from like 1999 from Virgin Atlantic, a load of Star Wars themed sick bags.
No.
Yeah. So, like, well, say, like two or three sick little Virgin Atlantic sick bags. He's just like, yeah, I don't know what to do with them. So I was like, dude, that's really cool. And a couple of other Pepsi promotional stuff, which were the usual kind of Darth Maul amount. But yeah, got a couple of these kind of sick bags, which is like, oh man, that's so cool. Because I'm sure if somebody stuck on eBay, you'd look and go, it's not worth probably a tenner. You know, you'd have to be in the right mind set to actually buy them. So yeah. The collection room is now in complete disarray because I've now been able to put stuff in shelves in a slightly more displayable way, hopefully.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, I know what will happen. It's just going to make, like, way for new stuff. I've kept my retro, so I'm going to carry on collecting those because I still think those are cool. Rather than just kind of going and chasing everything, I think it's time to be a little bit more discerning, I think the term is.
Well, speaking of discerning, we found out this week that final season of The Bad Batch, season 3, will be landing on Disney Plus on the 21st of February. Fantastic news. It's a great series. It's a shame that it's finishing, but we had a trailer and we had a poster and we had some images from the third season, and they've very kindly already let us know what day the episodes are coming. So on that first day, on Wednesday the 21st, we get episode 301, Confined, Paths Unknown, and Shadow of Tantis. So we get three episodes on that opening day. And then you run through the season. There's a couple of days where you have two episodes. In fact, there's 2 days throughout the run of the final season where you have two episodes. And then it finishes on the 1st of May with episode 315, The Cavalry Has Arrived. What that indicates, I have no idea, but the trailer's got Cad Bane. It's got a fantastic return for Asajj Ventress, who's quite a surprise after Dark Disciple. So what did you make of the trailer, just on first impressions?
I really, really enjoyed it. It has a lot of kind of action scenes in it. You know, you can see, again, a ramping up of Imperial presence. And to be honest, what it did was it actually reminded me of where they've actually kind of left off at season 2. And I kind of realized that I really need to go back and I think definitely watch those last couple of episodes of season 2 just to kind of get me back into the swing of where things are. Because, you know, they left it on a bit of a cliffhanger. This whole season looks like it's just going to be wall-to-wall action, which is fantastic. I kind of see maybe this is one of these kind of shows that has a finite amount of durability to it, perhaps. But I do hope that whatever happens, it kind of makes a way or paves a way for, you know, maybe a subsequent spin-off series or something else, because I think Star Wars in the animated world is absolutely fantastic.
I get what you say, that it is kind of a finite story. There's only... Given that these are ex-Republic clones who broke away from the programming and are doing their own thing, I suppose there is that scene in the trailer where the Emperor says, you know, whatever, it basically a paraphrase, and whatever resources you need, you've got it to make things happen. And so these guys are really, really up against it. Great looking trailer. Again, Cad Bane's back, Fennec Shandy's back, thankfully. Yeah. And also, as we say, Asajj Ventress, which was quite the surprise at the end of the trailer. So really pushed the boat out for this one. But given the flow of the show so far, you know, you follow these guys as they've been working and kind of trying to make a post-Republic life, if you like. And then they've realized that the Empire is building and that what they've done in the past kind of means they have to be involved and have to help. It's not just in their nature. It feels like that's as hardwired into them as Order 66 should have been.
Yeah.
So where do you think this is going to go? Do you see a happy ending, like the recent issue of Bounty Hunters essentially had an ending where everybody survived and went their separate ways, which was very much the surprise? Or do you think it's going to be a bit more like Rogue One, when maybe just a couple of them get out of it? Obvious ones we know will get out of it, but just a couple of them walk away and make it into sort of further adventures.
I do wonder if Wrecker's going to survive. You can kind of almost see him being the one holding back a massive oncoming horde of stormtroopers to let Amiga and Hunter get away. A bit like my collecting, it's maybe it's a page turn, and it just might mean that actually you know, if there is another season or something, it's maybe focused maybe on just one or two characters rather than the whole batch. You know, they've kind of been dwindling down, and you know, the Empire's chipping away at whatever clones are left, and you know, some of those are, you know, we kind of saw in season 2 that there's maybe hints that there's going to be a bit of a uprising. So maybe this is, we see the clones standing up, trying to make a stand. And if that's
Do you think it's important then that if they continue with animation, that live action is the Mando era and it doesn't feel like animation is going to drop into there, although I'd be very happy if it did. Do you think animation to do this post Fall of the Republic, Order 66 era that we are now beyond, do you think animation is the place to continue telling those stories? Because obviously we had Clone Wars, you know, and there's a chunk of time until Rebels, but do you think maybe that's where animation will prosper?
I think it probably will. I think, I mean, for one, I suppose they've got a lot of the assets and the design motif and language is down. We've still got a lot of time in that, and then it's a big galaxy, and just because we know what's going on in certain areas, we don't necessarily know what's going on completely. So I think there's always going to be hidden stories and characters and personalities that could maybe come to light that we haven't necessarily seen. I mean, I think also a good one to look at, obviously, is Andor, and we know how expensive that is to do. That's what $250 million did for the first season. That's a big blockbuster budget there. But they were very, very clever how they shot it. There's a lot of sparse environments in Andor. Most of the planets don't seem to have a lot there. So, you know, you then move your budgets into like maybe one or two big locales. You've done the walking tours around London, you know, all the little bits and bobs of that they've used and shot there, you know, and then they've used CG on that. So probably to kind of to show a very detailed version of the galaxy at this time, it's probably a budgetary thing as well. I mean, it'd be interesting also to see how Acolyte approaches this and see how they deal with that. Because again, Old Republic, end of the High Republic era, you know, the galaxy is thriving and that, and it should feel kind of affluent and that. So we kind of want to see that on the screen. And animation makes it easier to do that.
I found it interesting looking at the breakdown of when the episodes come out, that this time out, they're putting three episodes out first. And as we mentioned, there's a couple of weeks when there's two episodes. And then the finale, which I kind of am assuming or hoping will be a longer episode to wrap it all up. Given that they are making sure that it's all done by the 1st of May and starting on mid-February, which is a short month anyway, and all of a sudden you're through March and April, my heart tells me I'd rather they were putting one episode a week out. And we got 15 weeks of Bad Batch, because it's something to talk about between ourselves as fans and on the show, of course. But by the same token, it feels like they really are sort of moving this one through. Do you think then that maybe indicates that we could not be that far away from either the Acolyte or Skeleton Crew?
I think you could be right, you know. I mean, bearing in mind that they're starting not even at the beginning of February. We're starting at like the last week, basically.
Third week,
Yeah, really heavily compressed. And so they must be wanting to try and make, I say a scheduling gap, but there isn't really scheduling in streaming, but like some kind of focus gap so that, you know, we're focused on something else. And yeah, Acolyte and Skeleton Crew, they would be my bets. Now, out of the two, which one would you prefer to see?
I think Skeleton Crew has been in the can for a long time. But that being said, if Lucasfilm have made all these announcements of new shows, and they've made all these announcements, or rather further seasons, and they've made all these announcements of new movies, not that they need to have their head in the echo chamber of what everybody else outside of Lucasfilm and Disney are talking about in sense of positives and negatives. But if they want to give fans something fresh and new that really does feel unique and also doubles down on all the efforts and time they've put into the High Republic as a publishing program, my head tells me that Acolyte would be a great show to put on May the 4th and get that up and running. Because of course, like we said, last year you had the overlap between season 3 of Mando and season 2 of Bad Batch, which was kind of jarring. I'd rather they didn't do that. I want one then the other. I wasn't mad keen on them overlapping. I think it took a lot away from Bad Batch, which was consistently good last season. I'm expecting more of the same. The reason I say that as well, as much as anything, is I think Skeleton Crew is clearly focusing on younger kids. You've got an A-lister heading it. You've got Jude Law heading it. You know, you've got the guy that's just directed the last three Spider-Man movies, the last of which took pushing $2 billion, stupid money, you know, in charge of that project. It's part of the Mandoverse, which is hot as anything and has been for the last pushing 5 years now. But I just think now might be the right time to get the Acolyte out there. And then Lucasfilm and everybody else, we've got the convention season coming. They can start pushing this new show with new characters in a new era, something fresh, something that's not tied to other stuff, because everything we've got coming is either a revision of something we've had before, we opened the show talking about the Dawn of the Jedi book I've got. That's basically James Mangold's movie. The Rey film is a sequel to the sequel trilogy. But Filoni thing is a wrap-up to the Favreau-Filoni Mandoverse. And the movie that's coming out, Mando and Grogu, is a movie version of the TV show. So there's nothing new that isn't either completely fresh or a redo. But as much as you can call the High Republic new, now that it's in its third phase, the Acolyte is new. So I think they should go with that.
Will they have wrapped up the High Republic by the time Acolyte comes out? And do they need to?
I don't think they will. Phase 2 is a shorter phase, definitely.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because I've really enjoyed Phase 2. What I read of it, I can't pretend to have read everything. I dabble. I do read the comics, but I sort of dip in. I really enjoyed Phase 2. It was interesting, some of the concepts that other Force groups, as along with the Jedi and just other stuff, was quite unique. So I enjoyed that. And I hope at some juncture we see more of that storyline somewhere. I don't know where. But with Phase 3, I think they can overlap, because they've been very cute, really, with the with the High Republic. You know, when something's come out in a book or certain things, phrases, characters, locations, they did it with Galaxy's Edge, they did it with the Halcyon, they've done it with High Republic stuff, they've dropped it into the ongoing Marvel comics. So there's a lot of synergy and linked up thinking there, which is very good. So I would anticipate a similar scenario here. I know the writer's strike would have thrown things out. We were all expecting the Acolyte last year. I think we were expecting Skellen Crew last year. So I think they've been quite smart holding it back, because they've not been able to produce what they wanted to produce. Andor was filming its pickups this week. In fact, Diego Luna said it, I think, at the Golden Globes. He's back in the UK filming for a week. So Andor's probably wrapped now for Diego Luna. So I think they can overlap. I don't think that's an issue. But if they do, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was certain key location, characters, concepts, battles, whatever, that sort of hook together, because they have been quite smart at that.
And I suppose in some respects that it's a whole synergy thing of then potentially introducing through the Acolyte a way for people to go, oh, okay, I'll check out the High Republic. Some people may have given it a miss because either they're like, I'm not sure what it is, because of some of the online discourse around it. I suppose also how much we think the writer's strike hurt Ahsoka in terms of how its promotion. The fact that they have held back Acolyte or Skeleton Crew until this point, you can hope that means that they're going to be able to kind of push it, ramp it up, and make sure that everybody knows exactly what it is.
I don't think it hurt Ahsoka in the sense of the program being a great show and an enjoyable show. All of that was on point. But they've known since they were filming season one they were doing a season two. They just like to keep us on the hook a little bit. That's fair enough. Part of the game, isn't it? And also, I think Disney are smart enough to know that if it didn't get the numbers that was maybe hoped to do, and this is also a position, I don't know what they were hoping or what they got, because they don't really release that information. But if they didn't get what they were hoping for, I'm thinking they're smart enough to know that, well, we couldn't get Rosario out there. We couldn't get all the actors and actresses out there to push this show like we would have done. And goodness knows, they would have been on the Star Wars show, which went on hiatus. They would have been talking to all the pods like us and sites like Panther and all the other people out there that do this kind of thing. So it would have been everywhere. And by that token, you think, well, when Acolyte comes and when Skeleton Crew comes, they'll do that.
I did send an invite out to Rosario Dawson to have dinner with me, but she blamed the writer's strikes for not being able to make it.
Not just your bad cooking.
Definitely not the bad cooking.
Hey, it's Alyssa Wong, writer of Dr. Aphra, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
Great news for Indiana Jones fans. A new game has been announced. It's coming out later this year, and it's called Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Clips have been revealed. There's a trailer. There's behind-the-scenes stuff. There's a Developers Direct live stream. All sorts of information and images out there, with Indy right at the heart of the story. It's set between Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It's set in 1937, and it looks, frankly, fantastic. It's coming to Xbox. It's coming to PC. But the big talking topic, last year we had Dial of Destiny. Fantastic film that didn't get the love and attention it deserved at the box office. It's now on Disney Plus. That wraps it up for Harrison Ford. But hopefully it doesn't wrap it up for Indiana Jones. Clearly it doesn't, because we're getting this game. So, Mark, do you think the computer game world and games like this, evolving technology that means that it will only ever look better, sound more like Harrison, look more like Harrison, being Indiana Jones, do you think maybe that's the future for further Indiana Jones stories?
It's a great way to do it. And you kind of think, slightly surprised that they've not done computer games like this really for Indiana Jones already. I mean, the whole character and the whole environment, the world, and you know, the adventures that he goes on, very much geared up for a first person computer game. I think it's perfect for it, really. And it's actually quite exciting. I mean, I really like playing Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor. However, the one thing that obviously you've got with that is it, one, you've got a lightsaber, and B, it's very kind of cannon foddery. You know, you just take down all these people, man. You know, but Indiana Jones has to be more savvier. He's not James Bond. He's not, he hasn't got license to kill. You know, if he comes to get up against people, he has to be a little bit more savvy when he has to, you know, actually confront them. And I would imagine something like this kind of game will probably be a crossover between maybe something like Uncharted and, like, you know, Tomb Raider, because that's the kind of the nature of the game. We could probably argue and say that, yeah, those games were probably very much heavily influenced by Indiana Jones and the Indiana Jones films. And the fact I like this one, because it's what's set between Raiders and Last Crusade, that makes it quite interesting. So, yeah, I think this is going to be exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be trying to get it on PC. I'm not an Xbox guy, so PC will be the route for me. And I'm not a big gamer, but I saw the trailer and you hear that music and you see how good the cutscenes look and some of the action. They give you a bit of a look through at how Indy would operate in the game. And it's kind of very open. It seems that there's options that are very heavily focused on the whip as well, which I really like, because you didn't see enough of that in Dial of Destiny. I wish you'd seen more with the whip. Yeah. But going forward with Indy, Kathleen Kennedy says, we're not making another Indy film because Harrison Ford is 80 and he's Indiana Jones. So that's it. But by the same token, technology does move forward. And so the options to do an Indiana Jones animated show that's got that likeness, that is a possibility. And there's voice actors that can do very passable Harrison Ford impressions. And that's a possibility. And games like this, again, you think 5 years down the line, how good this will look because tech moves on. That's a possibility. There is a future for Indy now, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we had discussed about Dial of Destiny's not triumphant success in the box office, and there's got nothing to do with the actual quality of the film, part of it was down to how do you get modern cinema goers or younger cinema goers who basically have not really seen Indiana Jones. You know, the last film before Dial of Destiny was, what, 10, 15 years ago, was it?
15 years before, yeah.
Yeah, and because of the acrimony around that one, it kind of almost put a bit of a nail in the coffin for what was really an evergreen franchise. And the thing was like, you couldn't really get much excitement about this Indiana Jones film if you're 14, 15, and you've not really seen them. You know, it might be, oh yeah, that's that old film that my dad watches. Yeah. You know,
it's like us watching Great Escape at Christmas because your dad's watched it for 30 years. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You know it and that, and that's it, because somebody else was watching it rather than a bit. But you put it into the gaming arena and you do something a little bit different. And then potentially that's how you attract new and younger fans, which is really what every franchise needs to be consistently doing.
And it's a megastar, Indiana Jones. Even people who aren't familiar with the films are familiar with the history of the character and its association with Luke. Some people don't know that Star Wars and Indy were made by the same company. Yeah. That's a character that is a zeitgeist kind of character. He's a cultural icon. So for Indy to be coming into the gaming world, it's not like there's not been Indiana Jones games before. There's been loads. But to this degree, to this level, looking like there's awards down the line when you see how cool this looks, it's a very optimistic place for Lucasfilm to be. And also, clearly, before COVID, before all the other things that happened over the last few years, Dial of Destiny should have come out the year before and they pushed it back a year. And now this game is probably coming out exactly when it was always going to come out. So to me, that tells me that they're closer than they would have been, but these games don't happen overnight. This game's out this year, but they would have been working on it for a long time. So Lucasfilm had post-Dial of Destiny plans for Indiana Jones when it kind of felt like last year they were putting a bow on it. That's a very positive move.
Yeah, I think so. And I think what it's doing is it's probably a fairly good way of kind of indicating what the longevity of this franchise is going to be beyond the cinema into different areas without having to go down the risk, shall we say, of a Disney Plus streaming show. This is something that probably give them a little bit more kind of market insight, I think, as to what is the future for Dr. Jones and his Whip of Destiny.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
His Lucasfilm chief creative officer, his name's Dave Filoni, and he will, at the 51st Saturn Awards, be awarded the George Pal Memorial Award. It happens on the 4th of February. It's an honour that's only been given to the most deserving creatives, and that includes Frank Marshall, Kathleen Kennedy, John Carpenter, Sam Raimi, Guillermo del Toro, William Friedkin, Ray Harryhausen and others. Do you think awards like this are of value? Do you think it's a good way of signifying people's respect and admiration for somebody? It's the Saturn Award, so it's our sci-fi Oscars. But yeah. Do you think this is the sort of thing that Dave deserves?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say that in the last 5 years, if not longer, Dave's had a profound impact on the Star Wars that we've been consuming. You know, it's good to receive these kind of awards when he's still very much in the prime of his career. We're not talking about a lifetime achievement award and he's going to wheel him out on his 85th birthday with a canister of oxygen. It's good to basically say, hey, look, well done for what you're doing. Keep on doing it.
He's 50 this year, I think. So he's right in the blow of his career. He started pretty young with Avatar, The Last Airbender, and then moving on to The Clone Wars and everything else that he's done. So in the Star Wars realm, he, as you've said, made huge impression with all the stuff he did with The Clone Wars with George. Now all the stuff that he'd done with Rebels that is paying off into Ahsoka, and then with Favreau doing the Mandalorian stuff. And goodness knows what comes after that Mandalorian era if his film does indeed wrap it up and he sticks around and doesn't go off start making Godzilla films because he loves his big monsters. Now that he moves on, he gets this accolade, and it's a big accolade. And Lucasfilm will be thrilled for him and thrilled that they have such a visionary. And now he's the chief creative director. So he's leading a lot of stuff now. You can't look forward 10 years. The only people that can are Lucasfilm, and we are not privy to that information. But do you think that he will stay at the forefront? Do you think he'll ever get itchy feet? It feels like he's in the best place telling stories that he really wants to tell, and that now he's not just got the scope to tell stories that he wants to tell. More importantly, he's earned the scope to tell those stories, and he's got the confidence of a fan base that can be quite snippy and snarky and turn. Look at how they turned on George, for goodness sake. So it's a good place to be for Dave, isn't it, right now?
You bring up the next 10 years, and I suppose maybe only Dave knows, and even maybe Dave's not thinking that far ahead. Whether or not Dave moves on, that may come down to something that just happens naturally. Maybe he has stories that he wants to tell that Lucasfilm feel it's not their kind of wheelhouse. So maybe to tell those stories, he has to go and work somewhere else. But, I've never had that impression from Dave that he's kind of like ambitiously wanting to tell his stories. I think he seems quite happy and thankfully so to be in the midst of Lucasfilm in a now incredibly pivotal role. And hopefully that means that we're going to get many, many more stories from him in the years to come.
Totally. He does seem like a big picture guy. He looks at the broader scope of a plot or a storyline, or, if he was working for Marvel, he'd be doing what Charles Soule does by sort of plotting out things like Dark Droids and War of the Bounty Hunters. He'd be the general overseeing that kind of stuff. But I think you're right. I think for Lucasfilm at the moment, and Star Wars especially, so much on the plate now. He, as a person of importance within the broader realms of Lucasfilm, is more vital a cog now than ever.
I think so. Yeah, well, his title even says that as well. So he's a bit like the old man in Mortis. He's kind of like balancing the dark side and the light side. He's probably there in the middle. And like you said, can see the big picture, has a touchstone to what Star Wars meant to George. And by meant, I mean like George's kind of perception of what Star Wars is. And so it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall of some of these meetings just to find out, even something like that, how much does that come into the day-to-day conversation these days? Or does it not anymore? Or do they feel like Lucasfilm's now moved on and they don't need to have that conversation because everything that they're doing now is slightly different, but also I think in the right vein that it's honouring George's legacy without necessarily feeling like they need to go, well, George wanted us to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't need to be so overt now.
Yeah.
Maybe it's kind of imbued in what they do without putting your finger on it constantly, because then it becomes a cliche, it becomes repetitive. And I know George always liked the cyclical stuff, which has kind of become a bit overwritten. But I mean, Star Wars is a big church, isn't it? There's a lot of different styles to tell Star Wars. But I think if anybody's going to want to hone in and stay true to that format, if you like, not that it is a format, but that kind of style, then it's going to be Filoni, isn't it?
Amen to that.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, and you are following Fanthatrax.
So once again this week, we have some listeners' questions, and it is from Brian Cameron. You may know Brian. He's part of Fantatrax, and he's the host of Good Morning Tatooine at 9 o'clock UK time on Fantatrax TV. And his question is, should Disney release The Mandalorian onto network TV to grow its viewer base ahead of its movie release? Whilst it's well known to a Star Wars fan base, a relatively small streamer viewership has to be a concern. So, Mandalorian, Ahsoka, all these shows have a solid fan base and a vociferous fan base, but compared to what you would get on a network show where you have multiples of millions of people watching on a streamer, it's a much smaller amount of people. So do you think we should be putting, let's say, season one of Mandalorian on ABC TV? It's 5 years old now. It's not like it's fresh new content, but a lot of people who watch ABC will not have seen The Mandalorian. Do you think that would be a good move?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a fantastic idea. And I'm sure that before they greenlight any film, especially something like this, which has got a following, they probably have to do a bit of market research and figure out really what the market is. It's one of those things, like you go into any toy store or anything like The Range or B&M and that, and there's always like Mandalorian merch, especially Baby Yoda / Grogu merch floating around. And I wonder if that character, and maybe even Mandalorian, has kind of gotten to that point where it's saturated into the zeitgeist enough whereby everybody knows who he is, even if they don't know or have seen Mandalorian. And putting it onto something like network television is a way to do it, is to kind of almost just hammer it home. It makes perfect sense. I suppose it also does two things, doesn't it? It opens up the audience to the Mandalorian film that's going to be released, but also brings them potentially back into like a Disney Plus subscription as well, which I'm sure that they're not going to be complaining about that at the moment.
Xavi, you've just released seasons one and two on Steelbook Blu-rays. So smart move now, going back into physical media. That's one way of getting Mandalorian out to people. And if, given, again, that the show is 5 years old and Star Wars and Clone Wars and, you know, other animated shows have had DVD releases back in the day that didn't cost an arm and a leg, and it was pushing it out there to the broader public who are, you know, stood at the supermarket till and have got an extra $5 or £5 in their pocket and they could pick something up nice and cheap. Not that you're going to do that with Mandalorian. That's not what I'm saying. But to put it more in people's line of sight, putting it on ABC, I'm picking ABC because it's a Disney channel, but just giving them that opportunity. It does seem like a good idea because Mando stories especially, there is no Mando comic, spin-off comic telling new stories. There is no Mando novel. There's nothing outside of those so far, 24 episodes and the two episodes of Book of Boba, if you want to add those in, that tell you anything other than what we know. So it's a fairly tight and concise story. What I'm getting at is when people go and know and learn that there's a film coming and there's a date and you want to go and see this movie because it's a Star Wars film, and somebody says, well, to watch Ahsoka, you kind of need to watch 100 and blah, blah episodes of Clone Wars and Rebels. But to watch Mandalorian, you've only got to watch 24, maybe 26, if you want to count the Book of Boba, 45-minute episodes. You'll blow through them in a couple of weeks, and you've got 6 months before the film comes out. That's a more attractive proposition, even more so if it's on network telly, where you can just go, right, Tuesday's at 8 o'clock, we're watching Mandalorian.
You know, that was the thing. For us, obviously, as the fans, it was a big event. You know, the amount of times I was late or wanted to work from home on a Wednesday morning so we could watch an episode of Mandalorian, especially Mandalorian, at 8 o'clock when it dropped, was like literally most of the season. You know, I think I basically had to kind of lie for about 6 weeks to kind of like make up an excuse why I couldn't get in before like 11 o'clock. That was because I wanted to watch Mandalorian, and sometimes it's because we were recording a reaction chat. Obviously, it's no big surprise that linear TV is on the decline. That's something that the broadcasters know. You know, we discuss this at work, and even having something like Mandalorian, it's not going to like, yes, we'll save linear TV, however, broadcasting TV, but it's, you know, those things, as with everything, needs to change with the times. But at the same time, there's a huge amount of people who are still solely watching TV in a more linear fashion. And even if they don't, and they just record it onto their DVRs or Sky Q boxes or whatever, you know, they've got, that's still a way of them consuming it. But it means that, again, it's like it's every week, and it's something that ABC or whoever can promote, you know, and you know, market it. But I think it just comes down to that thing, doesn't it, of like it's keeping it out there and fresh. Because the thing is, when a season finishes on a streaming show, it doesn't matter what series we're talking about, obviously people talk about it for a few weeks after, and then things just drop off a cliff. You almost forget about it. Star Wars. Obviously, me and you talk about it all the time, so we can't really use that as an example. But that's what happens these days. People watch stuff, they go, that was great. And then it's not until they see promotion for the next series coming out that they go, oh yeah, let's watch it.
So here's a question then. Echo was just finished on Disney Plus, 5 episodes. Sequel to Hawkeye, in a sense.
Yep.
Ties in with the whole Kingpin thing. And they've just put the 3 seasons of Daredevil, Punisher, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist and The Defenders on Netflix. And those shows have all seen a big upturn. So yeah, my point is, do you think there'll ever become a time when Star Wars doesn't automatically go to Disney Plus because they want to get the word out more? Because Disney, for example, has other avenues. There's other channels outside of Disney Plus that Disney has a hold and an investment on. Do you think there'll ever come a time where maybe we get a 6-part Star Wars series, like, I don't know, a special event series like Obi-Wan Kenobi, where they put it, and I keep saying ABC, it could be anywhere, but they put it on ABC first. They put it on the network TV channel and get deals around the world. So ABC in Australia gets it, BBC in the UK gets it, or whoever. And then it comes to Disney Plus. And then we'll have a massive upturn because people are interested, people are curious. Would there be a benefit to that? It feels like a lost leader. It feels like putting the sugar and the bread at the front of the supermarket because they're the things that sell. Do you think that might be an avenue they look at?
I mean, I think it all comes down to the strategy, doesn't it? With Disney, I'm sure right now the strategy is stuff like Star Wars and Marvel goes on to Disney Plus first. And then if it gets syndicated, shall we say, or whatever, then it goes on to a Disney channel, ABC, for example. I don't necessarily see it working like that for Star Wars because I think it will always end up on a Disney platform first. I mean, maybe the thing to do is actually, they simulcast it. I mean, they did that with Game of Thrones over here in Sky Atlantic, but maybe it drops on Disney Plus at the same time as it drops onto ABC. So you have a run-up of 24 weeks before season 4 of Mandalorian, and it's going to be simulcast on ABC and on Disney Plus. The bonus is that Disney Plus, you don't have commercials. ABC, you probably have 20 billion commercials for every 10 minutes. So that catches everybody up. And then for the new season, it's like, oh my God, you can see Mandalorian regardless of if you've got a subscription or not. And maybe after the second episode where people are so sick and tired of having commercials before, after, and in the middle of the opening credits, then they go, oh, do you know what? I'm going to pay for a Disney Plus subscription. There's ways and means of doing it. For the most part, Star Wars will probably stay until Disney makes a big pivot. And basically, I would probably say even folds in Disney Plus into maybe something like Netflix. I don't see it going anywhere else.
If you want to be part of the action, visit fanthatrax.com or be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at Fanthatrax. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatrax.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Fanthatrax intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. And check out our Fanthatrax Radio Friday night rotation every Friday at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks, and every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, Fanthatrax.com, our social media feeds, Fanthatrax TV and Fanthatrax Radio are absolutely free. So no Patreon, Buy Me A Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news.
Until we catch up with you again, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanthatrax Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.